Hello, hello, and welcome to the Wing Women podcast, hosted by best mates and journalists, Frankie Gradden, that's me, and Charlie Gowns Eglinton, that's her. Hey, Chazzy.
Hi, Franks, how are you?
I'm good. Your backdrop gets nicer every time I see you. Very lush today.
Thank you so much. I've got some flowers over here.
Gorge.
Painted some of my frames. So that used to be a black picture frame.
Oh.
I've done a couple of them. Look.
That's nifty. DIY hack.
Thanks. Yeah. What's it saying on the t-shirt, please?
It says, choose love. It's a Rixo t-shirt.
Lovely.
I've got Nduja sausage sauce down. So that's never going to come out.
So you chose Nduja, actually.
I did.
I was going to ask, did you choose love today? Or did you choose rage? Chaos, perhaps?
I tried to choose love today, like every day, sometimes less successfully than others. Today, do you know what I chose today, Chaz?
What?
I chose a beer today.
Oh, did you? I was going to say, what are you having to drink? What's that? It's very dark.
I know. So me and Ben have had a little bit of a beer phase this January, and we've gone for dark stouts and porters. Which is like the red wine of beer, I feel.
What's a porter?
A type of beer.
I've never heard of a porter beer.
It's just like a dark beer. Anyway, this one is an Imperial Stout, 8.5%. Hold your horses. I'm only having half a tin though, otherwise I would be on the floor. It is by a brand called Duration, and it's called Fortitude.
Not to reinforce gender stereotypes, because obviously women drink beer, men drink wine, but that sounds like the branding team were thinking men when they called it Duration.
Yeah.
And Fortitude. Those aren't sexy words for women. I mean, I do appreciate Duration, but it's not something I worry about. But I like that men pick up a beer thinking, I would like to last longer.
Well, but the ironic thing is if you have a couple of these 8.5s, Duration is not going to be your friend, is it?
I don't think Duration will be the problem for getting up in the first place.
What have you got to drink?
I'm going to crack open this beautiful bottle. Look at this label.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's a map. It's once again from Shop Cuvée, only because I did an order there. So it's all going to be from Shop Cuvée for a while, because obviously I'm not going to shop, so I just did a wine order. And this is a Ganache. It's called Sea of Dreams.
Oh.
13.5%.
Ooh.
It's from vines planted in 1978. Isn't that glorious? On rocky soils with round river stones. Delightful. It's got a wax top, so you know it's fancy.
You love a fancy wax top.
But it does mean I don't know how to get into it.
You're just going to hack at it.
Was it me? Oh dear. God, it'd be awful if you just watched me sever something.
I wouldn't be able to get to you.
You'd have to call 911.
911? Do we live in America?
What is it? I don't think I've ever called it.
999 or 111. Is she in?
Oh, there we go.
That was a satisfying pop.
Whew. Anyway, cheers.
Cheers. Ding. Oh my God. Yum. Now that we've both got a drink in our hands, Chaz, what have you been up to? Tell me everything.
There's not much to tell. But I did file my first ever self-assessment tax return.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Why they make that January job is beyond me.
Absolutely horrible. I only had to spend 2.5 hours waiting to be connected to an advisor. And I only cried to 2 of the 4 advisors that I spoke to, which I think is pretty good going.
I mean, I'm saying it's awful. Despite living with an accountant, I pay a different accountant to do my tax return because I just find the whole thing so stressful and I am paranoid I'm going to file it wrong and then get banged up for tax evasion.
It would be funny if you paid Ben to do it. Has that ever come up?
It hasn't.
Ben, do you need some pocket money? I could pay you to do my tax return.
Extra little 50 quid. No, I've done mine as well. I felt quite good when I filed mine. I think that the thing with freelancing is that whatever you earn, you always have in the back of your mind that a big tax bill's coming. So I feel quite relieved that I know how much the tax was, I've paid it, I'm done for a year.
Nice.
Although I had a funny scenario when I was doing mine. I was collating all of my expenses and debating whether or not I could put through a Demario which is the local deli near us. Coffee and sandwich as, you know, sustenance.
Working lunch, which no doubt it was.
Exactly. And I was very pleased with myself for having kept all of my receipts from March 19 to March 20. Had a panic that I hadn't kept any expense receipts from March 20 onwards. And was thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do for my next tax return? Panicked for about 10 minutes, then remembered it's been lockdown. I haven't left the house. So of course I've got absolutely no expenses for my next tax return. So that might make life a bit easier, at least.
Still don't do it yourself.
No.
I would not recommend this to anyone. Anyway, what have you been up to?
Oh, I've just been shopping loads, buying loads of stuff. I'm sick of myself. Not any clothes, fun stuff, beauty stuff, none of that.
What have you bought?
Storage and things that would be advertised on JML.
What's JML? Is it like QVC?
Yeah, I've got really into that ilk. And Instagram knows I'm in that sort of mood, so it's targeting me with lots of household items. So I bought something called the Boot Buddy the other week, which is a portable shoe cleaner.
Cool.
I love it.
I do often wish I could take mine with me when I travel. I think this is great, but it's not portable enough, you know?
Exactly. Get yourself a Boot Buddy. It's brilliant. You fill it up, brush, brush, brush. All the dirt comes off your shoes. I've done all of them.
Great.
And I'm really happy with myself. I was most happy that I managed to find the Boot Buddy in lilac. This isn't an ad, by the way. I paid for it.
The Wing Woman is brought to you by the Boot Buddy.
So I bought that. Then I bought some acrylic storage for my spices and my kitchen cupboards. And I've organised all of those. And I can't work out whether it's my age, whether it's now because I'm a parent, or whether it's just lockdown. But I'm chronically boring now. Because I get excited over Boot Buddies and under sink storage.
But that is exciting. I have definitely felt an urge to completely redesign my flat. And for you, that's obviously creating storage solutions and making sure everything has its place. For me, it is a desire to actually burn my house to the ground. Because what I have realised is that lockdown and having to be in this room, I sit at the kitchen table to work. And then I move, I would say, 45 centimetres to the couch to watch TV at 6:30. And then I turn off the TV at 11:30 and I go to bed. So I just stay in this room, basically, all of the time. And what it is like is wearing the same outfit every day for 300 days. That is where I am right now. I need to not be wearing this outfit anymore. So I need newness. So I understand the need to buy things for your house and to clean your shoes.
I think also it's because, yes, you're spending so much time in your home, but there's an element of boredom as well, isn't there? And the one thing you can do when you can't leave the house is shop online. But the byproduct of all of this is that I live with, at any one time, I'd say at least 4 large cardboard boxes in the hallway. And I absolutely hate them. And I get rid of them and then ding dong, the doorbell goes. It's something else I've ordered that I've completely forgotten that I've ordered. And there's another cardboard box. Help!
If the recycling on my street is anything to go by, a lot of people are in the same boat. Actually, I haven't been doing as much online shopping at the moment, but I definitely feel guilt about getting post and getting deliveries and buying things off eBay because I'm aware that so many people through this pandemic have lost their incomes, are behind on their rent, are really struggling with money. But I think there are so many people who their income has stayed the same, but all of the spending is gone. No holidays, no eating out, no picking up a coffee on the way to work. Even those small little things make a difference, which is why those annoying budget people always tell you to give up your daily coffee because the £3 makes a difference. But it's like, yeah, it makes a difference to my joy of my day if I can't have a coffee. But it's true that not spending £3 a day on coffee does make a difference.
Exactly. And also, because you can't buy those little small joys, such as your takeaway coffee or your fun sandwich at lunchtime, suddenly acrylic storage boxes and a lavender Boot Buddy become those little joys and those little pick-me-ups that aren't super expensive, but just give you that little hit of dopamine.
What do you want to talk about this week?
Should we talk about Liz Hurley?
Yeah, obviously. Obsessed with her. I was obsessed with her already because she's been making so much marmalade and doing it in a cropped cardigan and a push-up bra. But she's taken it even further.
So for anyone who hasn't seen the picture, is she Elizabeth or Liz?
I think officially she goes with Elizabeth Hurley. I call her Liz because I just feel a kinship.
You'd be pals.
She's Liz, isn't she? That's more 90s.
Great, let's go with Liz. So Liz posted a picture of herself in a fur coat, some white knickknacks, I think maybe from her swimwear line, and nothing else underneath.
Fabulous.
And the caption read, dun dun dun, how could I resist?
And to be honest, if I looked like that, I wouldn't fucking resist either. You would be seeing pictures of me in my knickknacks, left, right and centre. How did you feel about this?
So I saw it and honestly just thought, oh look, there's Liz Hurley in her knickers. And that is all I thought, and then scrolled past it. And then when I went on the news the next day, obviously saw that it was quite the story, and Piers Morgan got upset, so then that caused a bit of a Twitter rampage. So he told her to put her clothes back on. He called it creepy and thirsty. I'm not sure how I feel about Piers Morgan using the lingo thirsty. He was upset because he assumed that Liz's son, Damien, had taken the picture. He didn't, though. Liz took to social media to correct Piers. Her mum took it, which I think is fantastic. Hi, mum, it's snowing. Do you know what would be great? Put your jar of marmalade down. Let's get outside. I want a bikini shot.
I'm not sure, though, if the creepy thing isn't the fact that Piers is adding this layer of sexual tension to a mother-son relationship. Because if it was Liz's daughter, would he be bothered about it? Would he think, oh, that's a bit creepy to ask your daughter to take a picture of you in some bikini bottoms and a jacket? I kind of think he probably wouldn't. And it's just because it's her teenage son, which is gross. Because, sorry, she fucking birthed that child. If he can't take a picture of her in some bikini bottoms and a jacket, they've probably gone on holiday every year and he's seen her topless sunbathing. If she does that, if she's into that. Women are allowed to. Why is that a problem, Piers? No.
He's the worst. I mean, he also alluded to the fact that she's 55 and that she should, I think he used the phrase, put your clothes on, which I hate. He said this on Good Morning Britain, and his co-presenter, Susanna Reid, did call him out for it and said, after women go over 50, are they not allowed to spare any flesh? Sorry, there's some fireworks going on outside.
Oh my God, I can hear them too. I was about to say, I really hope you can't pick up these fireworks in the recording. It stopped now.
I mean, you just think, oh God, are we still passing comment on women over a certain age who are dressed not as they quote unquote should be?
Well, it's because the constant struggle, I would imagine, of Piers Morgan's life is, where can I find relevance? And for him, that is winning headlines by saying something disgusting and or creepy, actually, Piers. Here we have it. I mean, this is constant, actually, because it's Helena Christensen wearing a bustier on her 50th birthday. And it's any woman who dares to want to have any kind of sexiness about her over the age of 40 is shamed constantly in our society. Elizabeth Hurley has talked about in interviews not letting herself eat bread, I think it was, and restricting herself all these things so that she can stay the size she does. She works incredibly hard and I imagine does lots of exercise to have that figure. So let her enjoy it, no? Imagine going to the gym all the time so that people could see you looking cracking, and then no one can see you looking cracking because you're in lockdown for a year.
That is very true.
It's been phenomenal for slugs like me because no one can see me being a slug. But for Hurley, that's just a wasted investment.
Over Christmas, I watched an interesting documentary on BBC Two. It's called Celebrity, a 21st Century Story. So it goes from 1999 up until 2020. So it covers the advent of social media and how that basically rang the death knell for the paparazzi. And I was looking at this picture and thinking, interesting, once upon a time, a shot of Elizabeth Hurley looking very sexy in a bikini in swimwear would have been captured on a beach. She wouldn't have been aware of it. It would have been a long lens camera. It would have been sold to the national papers for thousands. And actually, in this documentary, they speak to paparazzi photographers who say, we were literally, I mean, we were printing money. It was tens of thousands of pounds per image. And now, with social media and celebrities being in charge of their own social media accounts, they can put out whatever image they want. So they have completely taken back control, and they can call when they want to generate front page news, which is what Liz Hurley did. You know, she generated news that everyone was talking about.
And that's brilliant, because a sexy picture that you knew was being taken, that you posed for, that you felt comfortable while it was being taken, that your mum took, is very different to a sexy picture that was taken without your consent, without your knowledge, that might make you feel actually a bit violated.
But isn't it interesting that how many paparazzi shots are there going to be of Elizabeth Hurley in a bikini? And no one, to my knowledge, has been outraged by that. But because she took the picture and made the decision to post it, people have got their knickers in a twist because, you know, here's someone flaunting, to use tabloid lexicon.
It's her daring to think that she's attractive. Age, I don't know how old she is.
She's 55.
That's what they're angry about. Not the fact that they can see anything. It's her putting it up, which suggests that she likes that picture, which suggests that she doesn't hate herself as a woman in her 50s.
Yes.
Which is obviously not acceptable for Piers Morgan. Ugh.
I'm sure Liz has had the last laugh, because how many pairs of white bikini bottoms will she have shifted off the back of that picture? Even though no one's booking a holiday, no one's going to a beach anytime soon.
Short-sighted though, because if she sells them as a mix and match and you can buy just the bottoms, who'd buy the top? You know, you don't need it now that you've seen how it can be worn. So, I mean, she could have made more money there if she'd sold the whole bikini.
That's true.
Just putting my marketing head on, you know. Anyway, you sent me a link this week. Tell us about it.
So, I read a piece that I found rather interesting, and I thought of you as I read it, because I was thinking back to our conversation last podcast, where you were talking about being nicer to yourself and trying to squash the negative voices that are in your head, and how difficult that is when you live by yourself and you're not seeing lots of people who can help you bring yourself out of a sort of negative thought spiral. So I came across this piece on The Guardian, and it's called Why Your Most Important Relationship is with Your Inner Voice. It's by Rachel Cook, and she has interviewed a psychologist called Ethan Cross, who has a book out, Chatter, The Voice in Our Head and How to Harness It. So he basically talks about how prevalent the voice in our head is, our inner monologue. We all have it. Did you know, this is according to a study, we talk to ourselves at a rate equivalent to speaking 4,000 words per minute, which is...
I read that stat and was blown away.
That is so many words in just the 1 minute.
It's potentially even faster than we talk on this podcast. I can't be sure, but if you counted them, that might even be faster.
So basically, we are living constantly with this internal monologue. And for many of us in lockdown, our internal monologues are the only thing we've had for company, especially if you live by yourself, even when you live with somebody else. I mean, me and Ben long ago ran out of things to say to ourselves. So really, it's just me, myself and I chatting away most days. But Cross talks about how having this constant chatter can be very damaging to your mental health, especially if it is negative, which is sort of human nature. So just to quote the piece, but if such noise can be paralysing, it can also be self-sabotaging. What we experience on the inside can blot out almost everything else if we let it. A study published in 2010, for instance, shows that inner experiences constantly dwarf our outer ones, something that, as Cross notes, speaks to the fact that once a ruminative thought takes hold of us, it can ruin even the best party, the most longed-for new job. I identified with this hugely because I feel like my inner monologue, who I'm spending an awful lot of time with, is V-negative, and if left unchecked, can run wild. The other day I was creating some content for somebody, to be vague, I had convinced myself it wasn't good enough. It put me in a really, really bad mood. Not helped by the fact that I can't leave the house. I wasn't really talking to anybody. Ben was sick to the back teeth of me talking about it. It was all in my head. Content was completely fine. I was just existing with my monologue, who was negging me out.
What's her name? Should we give her a name? I feel like she's not you, so...
Oh, okay, okay. What's my neggy inner monologue called?
Cal.
Brenda.
Hater.
I'm sorry if you're called Brenda or if your loved ones are called Brenda. It just popped into my head. And Cross has some solutions for us.
Hit me.
Right, here we go. It's called distanced self-talk. I'm doing air quotes.
Right.
Because it is a psychology term. Basically, addressing yourself in the third person.
Okay.
So, if I was in a neggy spiral of, oh, Frankie, you're terrible and awful, then I've got a distant self-talk and be like, Frankie, calm yourself down. Obviously, you're not the worst. This is just your negative internal monologue speaking. You haven't been out enough recently. Calm yourself down. Pour yourself a glass of wine. Take a bath. That sort of stuff.
Okay, so imagining what a friend would say to you instead of letting Brenda do all the talking.
Exactly. Writing a daily journal, apparently, can be quite good in the sense that something that fulfills all for one day is literally yesterday's news the next day. You're kind of turning the page on it. This one's for me. Compensatory control, better known as tidying up, organising your exterior space means that your interior space is organised. Maybe that's why I'm buying all that storage.
What if you don't do that? Does that mean something bad about me?
No, it just might mean that another solution is for you. You could try Heidi Klum's one.
Right, what's Heidi got for me?
She keeps her milk teeth in a tiny bag, which she clutches during turbulence. Apparently. I'm not sure how that would silence your negative inner voice, but whatever works.
A, ew. Sorry for the judgment, but that's a bit ew. B, I don't have my milk teeth. Are they just baby teeth? Why are they called milk teeth? That's weird.
Well, I think it's because you have a lot of milk when you're a kid.
What do we call these then?
Booze teeth, wine teeth, coffee teeth.
Okay, great.
So there's a few different strategies there for us to peruse as we try and harness our inner monologue.
What I like about this is that it potentially sort of means that when my parents will ask me about something stressful that's coming up in my life, like how am I going to pay my rent, etc., or have I thought about my tax bill yet in the second week of January, and I say, I'm trying not to think about it, don't remind me, I'm not being a dickhead, I'm actually just looking out for my mental health because I'm compartmentalising stressful thoughts because there's no point stressing myself out thinking about them. Is that, it's not what you said, but it's what I took from it. So that's the same. Okay.
Whatever works, Chaz.
Ah, well, should we roll on to recommendations?
Shall we? Hit me with yours.
Obviously, I've been watching quite a lot of TV. I've tried not to do all TV though, because apparently some people read books still at the moment. I can't concentrate on books. I got Disney Plus, especially to watch The Mandalorian. It's great. It's really fun and escapist. I have seen all of those Star Wars movies. I couldn't tell you what order they're supposed to go in, and I get confused about the overlapping characters because I forget plot lines. So I wouldn't say I'm like a super fan, but I've seen them and I've enjoyed them. But this was great. I now really fancy Pedro Pascal. And I want a baby Yoda a lot.
Oh, okay. So I haven't watched Star Wars. I'm not familiar with it, really. Obviously, I know who Yoda is. I can imagine a baby Yoda, be cute. So is this right at the beginning? Is this at the end? What's going on?
I think the newer ones actually were at the beginning and they were like prequels. And then this comes and then the older ones come.
So does Darth Vader make an appearance? Is Luke Skywalker there?
There's a couple of overlap characters. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. But mostly it's just a completely new cast of characters and a few people you recognise names, but it's different. It's great. Just this guy, he's travelling around with Baby Yoda, he's wearing a metal suit, and yet somehow still acting. Like, how would you act through a helmet and suit and be a likeable character? I don't know, that's some good acting. Pedro Pascal. Anyway, it was great. There are two series. Obviously, I've watched both of them. I just binged them.
Oh, so it's a show, it's not a film?
Yes, it's a show. And they're making a third series, which is due this December, should anyone be interested. But it's like £6 to get Disney Plus for a month. And if you don't have anything to do, you can obviously watch two series in a month. I watched two series in like 10 days, so...
I also bought Disney Plus over the Christmas holiday to watch Soul, which is the new Pixar film. And it's brilliant. It's really life-affirming. What I love about Pixar is that the films are obviously kids' films geared towards children, but I always think there's a lot in there for adults as well. And Soul has that element of that. It's about life and it's about humans and how we operate. It's a really charming film.
Also, series 4 of Call My Agent is now on Netflix. If anyone's not watched this, it is a great French show about a talent agency that looks after lots of actors, and lots of really famous French actors actually make cameo appearances because the show is really popular in France. It's brilliant. If you are missing office intrigues and sexy office affairs and bitching about your colleagues while you make a cup of tea, you can get all of that from Call My Agent.
Yes.
Third thing, have you seen Nia Dennis, the gymnast from the University of California team? Her latest floor routine has gone viral and I am obsessed with it.
I watched it this morning and it actually gave me goosebumps. It's so good.
It's phenomenal. I've watched it so many times. And then finally, while you are on Instagram, which is where I watch that, I'm now following this thing called The Creative's Agent. Okay, I'll read you what it says in his bio because he's American. Property advisor to New York's creative industry leaders. Great. So, basically, he's doing these house tours because people can't go and visit houses during lockdown. So, on his IGTV, he's walking around these empty houses making videos of them. They're these amazing houses. And because they're for creative industry leaders, who apparently make a lot more than creatives in the UK, i.e. me, they are absolutely amazing. These are architect-designed houses, but private homes that you wouldn't normally get to see. Oh my God. There's one called the Villa Riel. It is 10,000 square feet of house, 700 feet of beach frontage, and 33 acres of land. Great. Just outside New York. The architect, Edward Durrell Stone, also designed the Kennedy Center, MoMA, Radio City Music Hall, and the Waldorf Astoria. He didn't normally do houses, but he obviously did for these, I imagine, very wealthy people in the 1960s. And you walk in and there's a swimming pool in the front room, a double height ceiling, and then huge fake palm trees around it. And it's flawless. It's great. And everyone should go on these house tours and dream of being a creative industry leader in New York. That's me.
I just want to applaud Charlie for getting through that final recommendation while I literally whacked my boob out and stuck a baby on it.
Multitasking.
Sorry about that. Alfie's joined us for this final bit.
Franks, what are your recommendations? But also, hi.
Right. My recommendations are, have you watched It's a Sin on Channel 4?
No.
Oh my God.
Tell me all about it because I've been hearing amazing things.
Yeah, everyone's talking about it. It's set in the 1980s and it is all about the outbreak of the AIDS crisis. It follows a group of young people, predominantly male, but one of the main characters is female. And they've come from all over the UK, they're in London, university age, living this exciting life, living in this house with parties and everything you do at that age. And their friendship group gets hit by AIDS. And you see just the devastation that it causes. It's a real weeper. It's heartbreaking. But it is so brilliantly done. The cast is great. Ollie Alexander is one of the leads. He is the main singer from Years and Years. Fabulous singer, fabulous actor. It's written by Russell T Davis. I mean, obviously, I've always been aware that AIDS was a thing, and especially in the 80s. What is so shocking is the way it was viewed. Because it was associated with the homosexual community, it was dirty. No one wanted to talk about it. Doctors wanted to distance themselves from it. There was no literature about it. There was no information about it. it's kind of interesting watching it in a pandemic where there's a virus that is wiping out huge swathes of the population, and knowing that we are so privy to so much information about it, and then thinking, gosh, 30 years ago, there was this virus that was such a huge killer, and so much of it was swept under the carpet. People who had it were too scared to say they had it. They felt embarrassed and ashamed because being gay was still so frowned upon. Oh, it's just sad, but it's so absolutely worth the watch.
I think it's really important that they've made that show, and I am looking forward to watching it, because I think it's so bizarre. As you say, being in the context of this pandemic, which is affecting everyone, and yes, some people are more susceptible to it than others, but it's affecting our whole country in the same way, and we're all having to take the same measures. And I think from what I've read and what I understand, that HIV and that virus was so divisive, because obviously it wouldn't have affected everyone. It wouldn't have affected pockets of the country that would just be, I imagine, almost completely unaffected by something that in another part of the country is causing this huge loss of life, is, you know, decimating communities. And that is strange, to imagine a group of people being so affected by something that another part of the same country or the part of the same society can just kind of ignore.
It just highlights that it was just so sad that ignorance and fear meant that people died of this virus, and it wasn't dealt with in the way it should have been dealt with. And obviously, thankfully, we are now in an era where medical exploration has been done to HIV, and it is now a manageable disease. At that time, if you got it, it was a death sentence, and just so many young lives were lost, and in such a horrible way. But the show is very, very good, and it's definitely worth a watch. My second recommendation is an article for The Guardian by Funmi Feto, who is a brilliant beauty journalist, and she has written a piece called From Ancient Egypt to Cardi B, A Cultural History of the Manicure. So it's one of those brilliant essays that focuses on just one topic and then really explores its background and all of its cultural connotations. And I mean, I really want a manicure. So the title piqued my interest immediately because of that. But I think also the beauty industry and nail salons have been quite in the spotlight since the pandemic hit. Because they've been closed, so many of them have been hit hugely through loss of earnings, and so haven't been able to open.
And because it highlighted sexism in the government, and that they reopened men's barbers but left women's nail salons closed, etc.
Exactly. And fortunately, we've had members of the beauty community have stepped up to get salons back open and help increase support for those who work in beauty salons. But this piece is a brilliant look back at how the manicure originated. I mean, it was like 3000 BC. Cleopatra did her nails. Nefertiti did manicures. It used to be used, like all makeup, as war paint. They'd have these amazing metal guards that you'd put on your nails. They were weapons. And the evolution through the years of, in the Ming Dynasty, flowers were used to create nail polish, and it was a sign of wealth if you had pale, beautiful nails that were lengthy, because it meant you weren't doing manual labour. And then in the golden era of Hollywood, that a certain manicured look came in. A really interesting point that Finmi hits on is the popularity of nail art and the very sort of extravagant nail art that hit East London, really, in the noughties with the opening of War Nails. I think that was the main driver of that, and how that brought this nail art that was actually rooted in black culture, in hip-hop and rap culture, as sported by Missy Elliott and Lil Kim. It brought it to a slightly more mainstream audience, and for me, notes how what was thought of as vulgar, suddenly, because it was sported on East London white hipsters, it became accepted and celebrated, And now go on Instagram and there's 1,000 pictures of elaborate nail art. She also picks up on the point that you made about how when the pandemic hit, because nails is typically associated with something that women do, it's then regarded as frivolous. And so in terms of government support, there just wasn't any.
I can't believe Cleopatra did her nails because, I mean, she also bathed in milk, right? So her beauty regime is just so much more extensive than mine. And she lived, like, what, 50 BC or something?
Her self-care Sunday was up there with the very best of them.
Here I am in 2021, showering in just water, and I mean hard water as well. It's very stripping. It sounds cracking and it makes me want to paint my nails.
Well, that's exactly how I felt. Very interesting. There's more to the Manny than meets the eye, is what I took away from that. But I recommend reading that. It's on the Guardian website, so you can go and read it whenever you wish.
Fabulous. Well, would you maybe like to begin your evening properly now that you've got a baby latched onto your nipple?
I should probably pay him some attention. Yes.
Should we wrap things up?
He's got a nip in his mouth. He's in the zone. He'll be happy now for at least 20 minutes, I'd say.
Great. Well, you enjoy all the things that you can do with just that one hand.
I will. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. If you would like to hear more from us, then please rate, review and subscribe.
You can also read us in our bi-weekly newsletter, which comes out on a Sunday. Subscribe at www.thewingwoman.co.uk.
Oh, we don't normally do the W's. I liked it.
Just in case.
And you can also find us on social media at Frankie Gradden, at Charlie Gowans, and at thewingwoman_. And email us at thewingwomanofficial@gmail.com if you have any questions.
Or if you just want to say hello.
Yeah, actually, just get in touch. It's fine.
Fantastic. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Until then.
Ta-ra.
Ta-ra.